Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Victor Marx is officially the Republican candidate for Colorado governor. The ministry leader who performs exorcisms and won't say how many people he's killed in his armed missions abroad will now be a significant underdog in the general election race against Democratic Attorney General Phil Weiser. The Associated Press called the race this afternoon. It is a narrow win, but outside the automatic recount margin over State Senator Barb Kirkmeyer. State Rep and MAGA pastor Scott Bottoms brought up the rear. Marx needs to unite the badly divided Colorado Republican Party. Kirkmeyer and Bottoms both said they would not support Marx in the general election, calling him a fraud and a con man. Kirkmeyer tonight thanked her supporters and added, quote, "And for the record, I still have not killed anyone." Marx posted this on social media.
"Those of you who supported someone else in the primary, I want you to hear me clearly. There is a place for you in this campaign."
Marx spent four times his nearest opponent's spending to squeak out the primary win. He now faces Phil Weiser, who has won statewide twice. Colorado has only elected one Republican governor in 55 years, and Republicans have not been competitive in a race for governor since 2014.
"Now, Phil Weiser, he's a smart fella, but he represents the current system because he is part of it. And that current system has made Colorado more expensive, less safe, and harder for regular families to trust government. In order to change this, we must win."
Victor Marx has not displayed much understanding of state policy or issues during the race. He's campaigned largely on a call for Christian renewal of Colorado. The last Republican candidate for governor, Heidi Ginnall, flirted with claims of election rigging and focused on furries and schools. She lost by nearly 20 points. Colorado's wildfires are a lot of things: dangerous, destructive, difficult to control. What they are not is a surprise. Scientists have warned for years that Colorado's fires will only get more frequent and more costly. Now there are five major wildfires burning at the same time, and two of them are among the largest in state history. The Ferris Fire in southwest Colorado is now the 10th largest in Colorado history. It began as three separate fires in Dolores and Montezuma counties and has now merged to burn more than 60,000 acres. That's more than 90 square miles, most of it public land. The Aspen Acres Fire in Pueblo and Custer counties is the largest fire burning in our state at the moment. It's gone through more than 96,000 acres, makes it the seventh largest fire in state history. It has burned more than 260 homes. Firefighters are still working to get a handle on the perimeter, but both the Aspen Acres and Ferris fires are still less than 20% contained. Crews near Ouray are fighting fire with fire. The Gold Mountain Fire has burned more than 30,000 acres there, and this week firefighters have been doing controlled burns around the perimeter to get rid of some dead fuel to help slow and shape the spread. For nearly a week, as fires have spread across Colorado, one of the state's new $25 million Firehawk helicopters has been sitting idle. It just took off late this afternoon for the first mission since last Friday. Our Mark Salinger found that fire managers are choosing not to use it.
"I'm a nerd. I enjoy looking at flight radar to see which planes are flying overhead. So when I noticed that one of the state's new $25 million Firehawk helicopters had been sitting on the ground for almost a week, while multiple wildfires burn into the record books across the state, I wanted to know why. July 3rd is the last day one of Colorado's two Firehawks flew. Since then, it's been at the Montrose Airport. The Aspen Acres fire has grown to 96,000 acres. The Ferris fire has scorched 62,000 acres. And the Gold Mountain fire is now at 32,000 acres. But that Firehawk remains on the ground, and the state says that's on purpose. The Colorado Department of Fire Prevention and Control told me that the Firehawk is assigned to the Gold Mountain fire outside Ouray. They say it's one tool in the toolbox, and the fire's incident management team hasn't needed it recently. Once a resource is assigned to a fire, they don't bounce around. So as this $25 million tool sits on the ground, other helicopters, including at least three other Firehawks that the state doesn't own, are flying and battling Colorado's wildfires right now. They're dispatched on the federal level, and the cost is shared by the feds, the state, and the county based on where the fire is burning. Late this afternoon, for the first time in 6 days, the Firehawk took off from the Montrose Airport to fly over the Gold Mountain Fire.
So the reason why we watch these helicopters so closely is because there's really a troubled history with the Firehawks since the state first spent $50 million to buy the two of them. Delivery at the very beginning was delayed, even as the state paid a crew to fly a non-existent helicopter. Then the Firehawk was down for several weeks for required maintenance last year, right in the middle of the summer fire season. And an internal report later on detailed serious morale concerns within the department. Kyle, as far as we know, that Firehawk is flying right as we speak right now.
A lot of reasons to watch it, pardon the pun, like a hawk.
Very closely, because these are important things. Like, we were just out at the fire at Aspen Acres, mm-hmm. and you had 9 helicopters flying all at once. And I noticed, wait, those aren't the Firehawks that we have that the state spent $50 million on. These are different Firehawks that the state is bringing in, that the feds are bringing in to fight these fires.
Right, Mark Salinger, thank you. As wildfires often start on public land and then threaten homes and towns, some former land managers are wondering aloud if there are enough federal Forest Service employees left to protect those lands. Our Evan Krugel looks at what's changed.
Colorado is filled with some of America's most pristine public land.
It's a lot of land. That's why it's a great job.
For years, Doug Vilsack helped manage millions of acres of federal land as the former Colorado director of the BLM. Now, as multiple large fires burn across the state, he worries there aren't enough people left to care for it.
By the time I left in March, our vacancy rate was 40 or 45%.
Statewide, BLM data shows staffing has dropped by nearly 50% in the past 2 years, a loss of nearly 500 jobs.
A huge reduction, really impactful on the ground.
And U.S. Forest Service jobs have reduced by 21% at a similar total.
You know, that was pretty alarming for a lot of people.
Reva Duncan is a retired U.S. Forest Service fire chief and spent years doing fuel reduction work across the West, like thinning forests to burn slash piles like these in the White River National Forest. She says last year, only 48,000 acres were treated in Colorado forests, the lowest number in 5 years.
What you're experiencing in Colorado right now is pretty horrific. And so as much work as we can do with that, that helps contribute to maybe certain wildfires not being quite as catastrophic. We talk about this fuels work. You know, it's not going to prevent a fire, but oftentimes it's a place where firefighters can make a good stand.
Doug stresses it's too soon to draw a direct line between this year's staffing cuts and the fires burning today. But both worry about the long-term impacts on public workers being told to do more with less.
I think right now it's just important to focus on the firefighters on the ground, you know, and the good work they're doing.
Unfortunately, we feel like this burden continues to fall on the shoulders of the firefighters who are doing the riskiest work and the most dangerous work, because we feel like they're being asked to do more with even less.
For Next, I'm Evan Krugel.
Those job reductions are an impact of the DOGE cuts and retirements not being filled. Currently, there is just one BLM job posted in the whole state of Colorado. It's a petroleum engineer job out of Canyon City. This week's Word of Thanks microgiving campaign is supporting the Southern Colorado Wildfire Relief Fund, which has been set up to help the hundreds of people who lost their homes and the others impacted by the Aspen Acres fire. And you all have raised almost $100,000 this week. Monthly givers to the Word of Thanks Fund are going to chip in another $40,000 on top of that. If you'd like to be part of this massive support effort for our neighbors in Southern Colorado, scan the QR code on your screen. Or text the word THANKS to 303-871-1491. The United Way of Southern Colorado set up this fund to help those Coloradans in both the short term and the long term. That nonprofit is not taking out any fees or overhead. Denver Mayor Mike Johnson hopes that a $100 million investment will send the message that Denver is open for business after some major employers, including Palantir, packed up and left the state. Today, the mayor joined business leaders to launch what they're calling the Denver Jobs Agenda, an effort to create 10,000 new jobs over 3 years. The mayor says the $100 million plan will provide early funding to entrepreneurs in the launch phase, give affordable loans to small businesses, and provide economic incentives for companies moving downtown. It will also expand the city's career development program, which trains people looking for jobs, then partners them with local employers. It's part of Mayor Johnson's larger goal to revive the ghost town that is downtown.
Economically, it's a huge driver for us to have those businesses in this city. Creating jobs and creating a tax base is really important for us. But also, we think as far as Denver's identity, we want it to be a place where people want to come and want to build the business. And so you've seen over the last couple of years us work hard on addressing any of those things that might discourage a business from being here, where they say, oh, it's too hard to get a permit. We now have a fast-track permitting process. You can get a permit for business in under a month in downtown. It's too slow to build something. We now have a Denver permitting office that makes what used to be a 3-year construction timeline, 180-day timeline.
The mayor says most of the funding comes from the Downtown Denver Development Authority, as well as state and federal dollars. He says that way the city can continue to invest in new jobs, even as they are dealing with a budget deficit. Leadville's a popular place to go in the summertime, not so much with the big fire right outside town. A federal court blocks Colorado's efforts to cap the price of some prescription drugs. And yesterday, I talked here about what people from Longmont are called. Longmontians? Longmontites?
I think that sounds boring, don't you? Like, I mean, I think our name is more fun.
Yeah, I wasn't even in the ballpark. Apparently, they came up with a great one a couple of years ago. That's next. A federal judge has paused Colorado's attempts to lower the price of an arthritis drug. The manufacturers of the arthritis medication Enbrel don't love the idea of Colorado chipping into their bottom line, so they're fighting for a permanent injunction in court. Last year, Colorado's Prescription Drug Affordability Board capped the cost that patients and insurers would pay for Enbrel, which is used to treat several inflammatory conditions like rheumatoid arthritis and plaque psoriasis. The board voted to cap the price at roughly $31,000 a year. Before that, insurers were paying about $53,000 a year. Patients were paying $4,600 out of pocket. So the drug maker Amgen sued, claimed that the price cap conflicts with federal law. Last week, a federal judge agreed, said that the state could offer subsidies but not order the price lowered. That judge temporarily blocked Colorado from limiting the price while the case continues. Smoke from the Willow Fire is filling the town of Leadville and has canceled events and caused a massive drop in summer tourism traffic. The Willow Fires burn nearly 7 square miles west of Leadville. There's 16% containment, which is where it's been stuck for days. Lake County Sheriff made the call to cancel the popular Silver Rush 50 race in Leadville this weekend. The visitor center said that trailheads are closed. Business is down almost 50% since the fire started. Business owners say it has been a rough go.
A little unnerving and pretty slow. When you see the flames flare up and it gets super smoky, you kind of feel the vibe in town change.
The Visitors Bureau is asking all the folks who plan to come into town for the Silver Rush 50 to still visit Leadville and support some of those struggling businesses. Meteorologist Chris Bianchi is along now, and we saw some storms threatening here in the metro area earlier, but then they got kicking out on the eastern plains.
Yeah, Kyle, I actually want to go back to the Leadville thing for a quick second.
Yeah, yeah.
We got a pretty good downpour right over the Willow Fire around noon, 12:30 this afternoon. Hopefully that means that firefighters are able to get a bit more of a handle on that particular fire. Again, around 12:30, we had a really good downpour over the core part of the Willow Fire. So hopefully that means some good news, the numbers that'll come out this evening. Little good news passed along there. But of course, watch out for mudslides, areas in or near some of the recent burn scars. Eastern Plains having a pretty rough go. We've got some widespread storms. Denver right now on the quiet side. Eastern Plains, though, a lot of these storms, a lot of severe thunderstorm warnings, mostly for damaging straight line winds, 60, 70 mile an hour winds. Same for us in southeast Colorado, along Highway 50 as well. Lots of severe thunderstorm warnings. In Denver, though, things are quiet at the moment. We'll see some of these showers and storms continue to push off to the east. It should be a fairly quiet evening in the Denver area. And then high pressure moves in, and this is a real push of some true heat dome-like stuff for us with temperatures that'll be flirting with 100 in Denver, Western Slope, 105, 106 possible in Grand Junction. We just missed the core of the main heat dome, but boy, it is going to be cooking Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, as well as into Wednesday. And final note is if we get to 90 tomorrow, we're going to be right around that tomorrow. We are at 8 straight days that are above 90 degrees. If we get to 90 tomorrow, that would make it 9 straight, and we don't have anything below 90 degrees anytime soon.
Coloradans, Denverites, those are kind of boring appellations. The people of Longmont have come up with a way cooler name for themselves. Oh, and there's a mascot. That's next. My apologies to Longmont. I was unfamiliar with your game. Yesterday, I asked here what the residents of Longmont are called, and I've spent the last 24 hours getting schooled. Longmontites, Longmontonians, will have four choices. One will be the existing flag, which, again, if you smooth out the little white C part, is actually quite slick. Julie writes in to say that it is not Longmontians or, what was the other word that I said? Longmontites. She said it's Longtuckians, which I don't think is true. I think you're trolling people because, Julie, you're from Parker, so I don't think that's true. What are people from Longmont called? See you next time. Well, we got a boatload of email and social media on that. And turns out Longtuckians wasn't all that far-fetched because a bunch of you told us the real answer is long monsters. Now, that sounds like trolling. So we sent our Byron Reed to investigate.
Some people might ask, what's in a name?
It's how you recognize yourself, right? It's how you see yourself.
For Scott Cook, it's a question he's happy to answer.
We are a community that is on the move. We are growing. And there's a lot of exciting things happening here in Longmont.
Cook is the CEO of the Longmont Chamber of Commerce, where they've come up with an interesting name for their residents.
Yeah, we call ourselves Long Monsters. Well, this is Monty, the Long Monster.
He says residents here proudly call themselves Long Monsters, a nickname that's become a symbol of community pride.
We reached the milestone of 100,000 residents, or what we like to say, 100,000 Long Monsters.
The term Long Monsters traces its roots back to the origins of the city.
We're, you know, right in the shadow of Long's Peak, which is where Longmont, the city of Longmont, gets its name.
The chamber held a community-wide mascot contest. Residents selected Monty the Long Monster, a friendly green creature designed to embody their community spirit.
Well, he's not quite as secretive as the Loch Ness Monster. He does come out. In fact, he actually likes to be in front of people.
From festivals to ribbon cuttings, Cook says Monty's become one of Longmont's most recognizable ambassadors.
Well, the public loves Monty, so whenever Monty goes out, all the kids want to hug him. He dances with them. He plays games at our different events with them.
For Cook, the nickname is more than a mascot. It's a reflection of a city with a little personality.
Well, I guess I would say we do see ourselves a little bit like monsters. Nice ones, though, but with a little bit of attitude.
For next.
I mean, he is a monster, so it's a little hard to contain him sometimes.
I'm Byron Reed.
Oh, look at that. They're arm in arm, and Monty's got those short little arms.
Oh, Monty's so cute.
He's cute. He's got those little T-Rex arms.
His little beanie with the eyes up. Cute.
Good-looking monster. Back with your feedback next. Feedback tonight via text. You always find everything wrong with Republican candidates. You know, someday you will have to stand before God and be held accountable for every word. That sounds like quite the intimidating fact check. Again, if there's anything that is factually inaccurate about our reporting, give me a shout. I would love to hear it from you before I hear it from him. This from Deanna. Once again, your ability to keep a straight face while reporting on political nonsense is so impressive. Well, Deanna, I would credit my 3 times a year Botox treatments, but actually our producer Mallory frequently will get in my ear and go, fix your face. So, see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.